Máis oi máis lúa Xumó oi xe ai nesis lúa
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming. First, I'd like to thank tonight's sponsors, tonight's share. We have, for the share and the CD this week, we have Mr. and Mrs. Shlomo Goldner, and he sponsored the share for the yard site in honor of the yard site of their son, which falls out tonight, Chav Hei Tammuz, Pinchas Alimelech ben Shlomo Asher Alevi. May his neshama have a tremendous, tremendous aliyah to the greatest, greatest heights, and may he send down to his family comfort, nechama, and a whole new energy and vigor in life, and all kinds of brachas, begashmias, beruchnias, and from now on, there should only be simcha, joy, and happiness in their mishpacha, and very soon they should be reunited with their dear son, with the coming of Mashiach and the resurrection, where all Jews will celebrate forever and ever. The other sponsor for tonight, also for the shir and the CD, was the Smolyansky family, and this is in honor of a few yard sites that fall out in the month of Tammuz. First, we have a grandfather whose yard site was today, Avram ben Yitzchak. His first yard site passed away last year on Chav Dalet Tammuz, which was today. May his neshama have a very, very great aliyah. That's to who the CD has been dedicated to. And the other members of their family, also in the month of Tammuz, Yisrael Pinchas ben Chaim, Yosef ben Yisrael Pinchas, and Shmerel ben Wolf. May the neshama of all these have a very great aliyah. One more sponsor on tonight's class was by Mr. and Mrs. Shaul Ragarotsky, and this is in honor of his father's yard site, which is tonight, David ben Feivel, on Chaf Hei Tammuz. May his neshama have a very great aliyah. Send a lot of blessings to him and to his mishpacha. This week, we are now in the midst of the 3 weeks. It's the most painful and difficult time in the Jewish calendar. And it's a time that we are mourning for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and for the consequential exile. So it's relating to, it's a time that we think about all the pain and suffering and hardships that we ourselves encounter and all the suffering that there is in the world. And we know that the Torah is what nurtures us. So that's why it says from the Shlach HaKadosh that in every season of the year, we receive our nutrition, we receive our insight and guidance from the parsha of the week that we read on that Shabbos. So even though the parsha doesn't necessarily seem to relate always to the time, to the holiday or the period, but if we dig a little deeper, we look inside, we can see the connection of the parsha to the time. And the Shlach himself points out to these parshias and explains the connection of parshas Matos Masai to the period of sadness that we're in. And obviously, in order for us to be able to do what it takes to break out of this exile, to finally put an end to it, we need to receive a special energy, a special in strength. And that strength comes from the Chazak Chazak, in which we conclude this parsha. It gives us the strength to deal with the difficulties and the hardships, and ultimately to transform it. So the Shlag gives whatever explanation he gives. However, in tonight's class, we are going to focus on a specific element that is in this week's parsha, the second parsha. It's a double portion, Matos Masei. But in the second parsha, Parshas Masei, which gives us a very, very profound insight and understanding into the pain and suffering that there is in life, and also a very, very, very strong comfort in the meaning of all this chaos. And it's very, very insightful and very warming, this lesson that there is in this parsha, in Parshas Masei. The opening of the parsha of Parshas Masei recounts the journeys of the Jewish people. The pasuk begins, Ela Masei b'nei Yisrael, these are the journeys of the Jewish people. They left Egypt. Okay. So it goes on to enumerate the different cities that they went, the different encampments. They left this place, and they journeyed to the next place, and from the next place. Because when they left Egypt, it was a long journey, especially since the sin of the spies, so that held them back for 40 years. And there were a list of 42 encampments, and where they were journeys, and in which they journeyed. So Rashi, in the first Rashi, right at the beginning of the parasha, asked the question, why does the Torah have to say this? Lama nichtava ha-masoyis alalo? Why does the Torah have to give us all these masois, all these journeys? I mean, we read already about them, at least the important ones. All the places that the Jewish people went to that where something occurred, like the sin of the spies, or the giving of the Torah, or the receiving of the man, all these things we read already at great length in the earlier parashas. So what don't we know there that we need to fill in over here? If we're going to say there were some of them that are not mentioned, there are all kinds of names over here that we don't find early in the Torah. So these are different. But then those that nothing really significantly occurred, who cares? You know, which place? Are we going to go back to the Arabian desert and find a little hick town called whatever the names are? And that's where the Jews were. Why is this part of the eternal Torah, a lesson to life for us, for need to know these places where they went? So Rashi gives two explanations. First explanation is in the name of Rav Moshe HaDarshan, and we're going to focus on the second explanation. Second explanation that Rashi says, Rabbi Tanchuma darsh by drash acheres. Rabbi Tanchuma darshan's a second drasha. Now this drasha that we're going to see now is very, very comforting. It's interesting that it's in the name of Rabbi Tanchuma, and Tanchuma means nichum, means comfort. So he says like this, he says it's a mashal amelech. There is a mashal, there is an analogy to a king. His son, his child, the prince, the king's the child, the prince, was sick. So the king took him to a very distant place in order to heal his child. As they were returning from their journey, so his father started recollecting all the places where they journeyed. And as they were going back, they retraced their steps. They stopped in every single place that they had initially stopped when they were going to this distant land. So they're coming back. Each place when they came back, their father says, you remember, Yankel? Remember what happened over here? You remember what happened in this place? And so this is how he's reviewing with him. And they're looking sort of at their photo album of all the trials and tribulations, the difficulties that they had while they were in this journey. Amar Loi, the father said to him, Kan Yeshananu, here's where we slept. Kan Hoikarnu, here's where we became cold. Kan Cheshashtes Roishcha, here's where you had a headache. V'chulu. That's the end of Rashi. Seeming to imply and telling us, the Torah is telling this to us, it's God, in his great love to the Jewish people, is recounting and telling us all the experiences, wanting us to remember the good times and the bad times. The Medrash continues, we don't have it in Rashi, the Medrash continues, and that is why Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, write down, record, Ele Masei B'nei Yisrael, record in one recording, one listing, all the places where the Jewish people were, because I want them to know all the places where they angered me. Shechisini, all the places that they got me upset. As we look at the story, we find that many of them, true, have stories of rebellion, of sins. Okay, that's what it says. Now, just looking at this superficially, We have a good explanation why the Torah tells it to us, and we're ready to go on to the next pasuk. However, we're taught that we're supposed to look a little deeper. So when we read the story, we read what Rashi is saying. Many, many questions come to mind, serious questions. The first thing is, the general idea is very fits. God is a king, we the Jewish people are the prince. We're going on a journey. Why did the king take us on the journey? Because we were sick. The Jewish people were in Egypt. In Egypt, they were ill. Physically, they were ill. And mentally, emotionally, spiritually, they were ill. Physically, we were ill. It was a very brutal place. We were injured. There were many of them that were maimed. Many of them that were hurt. They were living in a very, very, very unhealthy environment. They were, so that's their, spiritually too. They were, in the, as we know, in the 49 gates of unholiness, of impurity. So their neshama had contacted all kinds of infectious diseases. And God took the Jewish people out of Egypt in order to bring them to the land of Israel in order to heal them. So coming to Eretz Yisrael was a long journey that Hashem brought us. The ultimate destination was the land of Israel in order that we should restore ourselves physically and spiritually. We can attain the great heights and the state of being that the Jewish people are supposed to be in as a healthy prince. So that's the meaning of the journey. However, when the king is telling, and it's a journey is always difficult as we're going. And things happen. What happened? So Rashi says three things, the king says. Here's where we slept, here's where we got cold, and here is where you had a headache. So the question is, what is this symbolizing? What are these particular three things symbolizing? We slept, we became cold, and we had a headache. What does this mean? That's number one. It must be that there were certain events and occurrences that happened during this journey where the king, which are indicative in these three things. So what are they? Number one. Number two, the Torah doesn't just tell us about three journeys. The Torah tells us a whole list of 42 places. And this is, seems to be in the Medrash an explanation of why the Torah says the whole thing. So what happened with the other four, with the other 39? Why does it only mention the three things that happened? So obviously the simple answer is, etc. The Medrash is not going to go list a whole list of things that happen. It's just trying to give you a general idea, like a father who's gone on his child in a difficult journey, so then he's reviewing just, the various different things that could have happened on the journey. Here you slipped and you fell, here you hurt yourself, here we needed special medical care, and here you were tired and I was tired, here we got upset with each other. Whatever it is that they're going over. So the Medrash is not specifically telling all of it, it's only and the rest. Okay, that would be the simple explanation. However, why we can't accept that is usually the Medrash does say the word v'goymer v'chulu and the rest. Over here, it doesn't say that in the Medrash. The Medrash says these three things, and it goes on further. It doesn't tell us of anything else and the rest of other occurrences. Interesting, Rashi goes different than the Medrash, because Rashi does add the word v'chulu and the rest, which would seem to imply that Rashi is saying an etc. But the Medrash doesn't say that. So it would seem to imply that it's these three things. And these three things are not, shouldn't be understood as specific things that happened to the Jewish people at particular junctions in their journey, but rather should be understood of a broad generalization. These are things that happened to you in our journey. Each one of these are speaking of general situations or general experiences that we had, which were experienced not in one specific place, but rather experience that happened over the entire course of the journey. So if we look in the Maral, in Gur Aryeh, the Maral of Prague, he's, I guess, bothered by this question, and he tries to explain these specific mashalim that the Medrash says, these examples, not to be understood as this particular thing happened in one place, but the general state of affairs that the Jewish people were in during the entire sojourn in the desert, during their entire journey. So the Maral says like this. When it says here we slept, that is representing sleep is a time of peace, tranquility. Everything was good and wonderful. You were able to sleep at night without any worries. So if we look through the encampments of the Jewish people in the desert, there were many, many places that they went to where they had nothing to worry about. All the things were taken care of. There was calm, there was peace. It was wonderful. It was beautiful. Like when they're camped by Har Sinai, waiting, anticipating the giving of the Torah. It was a beautiful time. So that's the idea that here we slept. When it says over here we were cold, cold is indicating a time of need. The Jewish people were needy at certain times. They needed assistance. Here they were hungry, they needed food. Here they were thirsty, they needed water. Here they needed shelter. Here they needed to go, they were worried. They were intimidated by the nations that they were going to fight. So they needed some information, whatever it was. So if we read in this story, we find many, many, many stations and many places where they were in a state of need. And that's the comparison of when a person is cold. So they need warmth. So they need whatever it is, clothing, shelter, in order to warm them up. The third one, here you had a headache, is representing the instances that they were in danger. It's one thing when they were in need. There's another thing, they were in serious in danger. When the Egyptians were running after them, let's say by the Yamsuf, and they cried out to Moshe for help, so there they were in serious danger. When Amalek came to fight with them, they were in danger. When Bilam wanted to curse them, they were in danger. So this is what, this is the three general, and if we look at all the journeys, we can fit them into one of these categories. This is how the Maral explains this. Very good, and this explains both questions. First of all, what are the three things that the Rashi or that the Medrash means by saying these three things? Where do we find it in the journey? Now we understand it's not specific journeys, it's the overall. And also how this includes all the 42 encampments, not only three places that they went to. The problem, however, with the Maral is a few things. First of all, if we take a look at the Medrash and Rashi, it seems like the Medrash is not into generalizing. The Medrash is trying to be very specific. Because if the Medrash was trying just to be general, the Medrash could have been even more general than this, and the Medrash could have just said, it's a mashal for a king that went on a journey with his son, and they experienced difficulties on the journey. That makes a lot of sense. Everybody would understand that there's difficulties on the journey. And then we'll understand. And then the father goes back and he tells his son, these were all the difficulties. Do you remember what we've gone through together? The good times and the bad times. Could have said that. The fact that the Medrash starts getting into detail and say, here is where you had a headache. Here is where we got cold. Here is where we slept. This seems to be unnecessary. If the Medrash is saying it, it's a sign that the Medrash wants to be specific. Now, according to the Maral, it's not being specific, because if we're looking for times of peace and tranquility, yes, sleeping is a time, it's a peaceful time, but you don't have to say that. You can say, that's a place that we rested. If you're trying to speak about a place where they were in danger, a headache is not the worst danger. You can use a Tylenol. If you want to say danger, you can find far more extreme examples of being in danger. A child that the bandits were coming to capture him or the like. Or need, we could have found a more applicable, something more appropriate. Could have said the child was hungry, thirsty. Why are we giving an example of they were cold? We don't see in the story of the Jewish people in the Midbar that there was a specific time when they were cold and they needed warmth or the like. That's the first problem with the Maral's Pirush. The second problem is, according to his explanation, what is the Medrash concluding and saying, all these places you angered me. The father is saying to his child, I want to review with you all the places that you angered me. According to this, there is no anger. There is no anger whatsoever. Because every single element over here has nothing to do with anger. Here's where we slept, represents the times of peace. Here's where things got a little scary or things got a little rough. You were in need. I took care of your needs. Here you were in danger. I took care of your needs. There's no anger. What is the Medrash continuing and saying, here is where all these places, Kiasuni, you have angered me. What's the anger? There's no anger. The truth is, if we're looking at the Medrash itself, even not according to the Maral's interpretation, just looking at the Medrash lists three things. Here we slept. Here's where we got cold. Here is where you had a headache. Two of them have a negative element to it. Getting a headache and being cold is not good. Okay? So we can understand somehow how that relates to anger. It's not the same thing. You're angry, but it's still a negative, just like anger is a negative situation. I'm angry with you. So these two things are also in a state of, there's a certain negative element to it. But when it comes to going to sleep, what's bad about that? What does the Medrash say? Kan yashanu, here we slept. And because we slept, what does it have to do with anger? And this is one of the examples the Medrash is giving for for Hashem saying to the Jewish people all the difficulties and the anger that they angered him. So we need that needs to be explained. The other interesting thing is, how come by two of these things, the father includes himself with his son? The father said, here we slept. Here we were cold. But in the last place, he said, here's where you got a headache. What is the difference? If you're looking, if you're reading carefully, we have to notice this. Why is the headache the child's headache, but the other one is both of us, Hashem, the king and the prince? We were cold. We were sleeping. What is the reason for that? And the last and final question is, if in the mashal, we're going to say that everything is accurate, in the mashal, which is the example, the analogy that the Medrash is giving and Rashi is giving, is they both traveled to a faraway land, and when they went to the land, then when they came back on the return journey, they stopped in all the places, and they were reminiscing of whatever the events that took place as they were going. In the nimshal, meaning in what we're comparing it to the journey of the Jewish people, there is no return journey. We never went back to Egypt. God took us from Egypt, brought us to the land of Israel. When are we going back? So what does it mean when they were going back? There was no going back. We never retraced. There is actually a prohibition. Jews are not allowed to go to live in Egypt. We're not allowed to go back in that way. They wanted to go a few times. They threatened Moshe, let's go back to Egypt. But they didn't go. So what does it mean on the return journey? Hashem said, here is this, where this happened, here is where that happened. Now, of course, we could explain it to mean it wasn't literally a return journey. It means that God was bringing them back. He was taking them back to this old experiences. He was saying, oh, let's in our memory, he was bringing them back mentally and emotionally to these experiences and saying, here, let's review what happened. Okay, it's an answer, but we can definitely find a better answer for this. So, a simple interpretation, according to Pshat, according to the simple meaning, that is going to satisfy all the above questions, I don't have. However, an explanation that is a combination of a solid Pshat in terms of the simple meaning of the Rashi, in combined with a mystical interpretation of what this really means on a mystical level, will explain all these things. Again, it's not, it doesn't satisfy it all in Pshat itself, but in the combination of the Pshat and the more Drush element or the mystical part, based on the interpretation according to Pshat, this will all fall into place. When Rashi says there were three things, sleeping, here we slept, here we got cold, here is where you got a headache, this is simply referring to the first three journeys that the Jewish people went. They went 42 times, they traveled in the desert. But it was the first three. What were the first journeys of the Jewish people? So if you go back, you go in the beginning of Maaseh, or you go back in the Torah, what was the first place they left Egypt? They left from a place called Ramses, and they traveled from Ramses to Sukkos, a place called Sukkos. Vayisum Ramses, and they went to Sukkos. That was the first journey. When did that take place? On the 15th day of Nisan, Pesach in the morning, in the middle of the night, at Bechatzos, God brought the plague of the firstborn. Egypt was awakened in the middle of the night. They tried to chase the Jewish people out during the night, but they weren't successful. Moshe said, we're not thieves. We're not going to run away like thieves in the middle of the night. We're going out in the daytime. So on the first day of Pesach, 15th of Nisan, is when the Jewish people traveled. Where did they go on that day? From Ramses to Sukkos. It says that was a very special journey. They were gone. They went with enormous speed. On that journey, it says, "Ve'esa eschem al kanfei nisharim." I carried you on eagle's wings. That was the first journey. Then they arrived there. There was still time. But for whatever reason, God decided that in that place, they're going to stay and lodge in Sukkos. They're staying there for the night. As Rashi says clearly in Parshas Beshalach, "Vayisu misukkos." They went from Sukkos. "Vayachnu be'esam b'ktzei hamidbar." They went from Sukkos to Esam. Rashi says, "Biyom sheni," on the second day. Because the first day they came to Sukkos. On the second day they went from Sukkos to Esam. Okay? It's the second journey. What is the third journey? They were already at the edge of the desert, and suddenly God commands Moshe, back. He gave him the order to return and about face. Everybody's going back. We're going back towards Egypt. They went to the place called Pi Hachirois. Why did they come there? They went to that place in order to entice Egypt to come to tempt the Egyptians to come running after them. So they gave off some kind of a feeling that they're lost, they're confused, they don't know where they're going back and forth. So that would make them be vulnerable prey, so that Mitzrayim can run after them, and that would end in the drowning of Egypt in the Yam Suf. Okay, so this is the third journey, going from Esom, going back to Pi Hachirois. We analyze these three things. We see this is exactly what Rashi is saying. The first place, he says, Kan Yashananu, here's we slept. In the literal sense, that's where they slept. The first night, they went, they camped, they slept for the night, they lodged. What happened in the second journey? What happened the second place where they went? What was new then that they didn't have the first time? Well, they received the Anane HaKavod. They received the clouds of glory, which they didn't have before that. How do we know they received the Anane HaKavod at Sukkos? Well, it says in Parshas B'Shalach, Vayisu Misukkos Vayachnu Be'ezam. And the next verse says, Vahashem holech lefneim. Hashem was walking in front of them, ba'amud anon, with a pillar of cloud by day, and by night with a fire pillar, lanchoysam aderech. So the Torah says clearly, it was at that second leg of their journey, the second part of their journey, is when God brought the clouds of glory to accompany them on their journey. Okay, so it was the second. The Targum Yonis and Benazil and Parshas Boi, Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Lamed Zayin, states clearly that it was at Sukkos is where Hashem brought the clouds of glory to encircle them, to protect them. He says six clouds, one above, one and then one below them, and then there were four on the sides, and then one went in front of them. Okay. Now, what was the point of these clouds? The point of the clouds were many things. One of the things was that it was the one that went in front of them went in order to smooth the road, to make the terrain far more easier and accessible. So if there were, it flattened the mountains and it raised the valleys, it should be smooth. That's what it did. And so that's that one, the one that went in front. And then there was one behind them that was protecting them against the Egyptians when they were shooting their arrows and spears or whatever they were. So this was intercepting. But then there was one above them. What was the point of that cloud? So even the Targum Yonason says, and we have this all over, and this is why we celebrate Sukkot, is Hashem was protecting them from the intense heat of the sun. They were going into the desert, and the desert is a very hot place, and it's very, very uncomfortable to travel in the scorching sun. So in order to protect them, they shouldn't get sunburned, they shouldn't be scorched. So Hashem put the clouds over their heads in order to shield them and protect them. Now, the reason why they didn't need it on the first journey, from Sukkot to Ramses, because that whole journey was miraculous. Over there, Hashem picked them up, whisked them in minutes. They came from Ramses to Sukkot. As we said earlier, the first part of the journey was, Hashem says, I put you on eagle wings. The second part of the journey already, they were walking with their feet. This was already a more natural, as much as we can say natural about that time, but it was a far more of a natural kind of a journey. They needed protection from the intense desert heat, or they were coming close to the desert. So that's why they received the clouds at Sukkos. They received the sukkah of shade and shelter that Hashem protected. That's what Rashi says. Karno, karno, here's where we called off. I protected you, I shielded you. It wasn't that hot anymore, it was cool. Then, what happened at the next journey, at the next place? When they came to Pi Hachirois, over there is the first rebellion of the Jewish people against God. Okay? Is where they, because here's when suddenly they realized Egypt was at their heels. It says, right after the pasuk, it says they came to Pi Hachirois. It says that Pare came after them. And then the verse says the Jewish people, they were still at Pi Hachirois. It says the Jewish people opened up their, lifted their eyes, and they saw the Hinei Mitzrayim, they say Achreim, Egypt was breathing down their necks. They were coming after them. They were terrified. So they called out, and they cried out to Moshe for help. But if you read the story, you find that it's very, very interesting, in that instead of just panicking and screaming, help! They didn't do that. What are they saying? There's a certain cynicism and a certain humor in the way they complain. Remember teaching this always to fourth grade every year. It was so, what are the Jewish people saying? They don't say help. What are they saying? Hamibli ein kvarim. Aren't there any graves in Egypt to be buried? You brought us out of here because there was no graves in Egypt. You have to bury us over here. Which is, again, it's so it's so Jewish that their way of their complaining right away was with they were a smart aleck right over there in that first complaint. What is that? So even though this was an emotional outburst, it had an element of logic and reason. They were saying, well, if you're going to kill us, you could have killed us in Mitzrayim. Why killing us over here? That's why this complaint is called Cheshash Tez Roisha. Here's where you got a headache. Here's where we started draying a cup. In Yiddish, you say a dray cup. A dray cup is here's where Yidden use their minds again in rebellion against God. So that's the third encampment. Kan Cheshashta Es Reishcha. Here is where you got a headache. Simple. That's the meaning of what Rashi is saying, as it implies to the three places where they went. This explains, again, the connection. But what this doesn't explain is, why are all of them called angering God, as we spoke earlier? It just doesn't explain what does it mean on the return journey, and many of the other questions we asked before. In order to understand that, we have to dig deeper and go into the mystical meaning based on what we just said about the three things that happened, or what it means we went to sleep. Literally, it means sleeping. And then the headache means the using of their minds to rebel against God. And the meaning of being cold is that he protected them simply from the heat of the sweltering heat of the desert. And that's the coolness that came upon them. So if we take this into the realm of the mystical and the deeper dimension, so now this will answer all the questions we had before. The desert, the journey into the desert, means more than just the journey of the Jewish people during that time and during those 40 years. This is symbolic of the future journey of the Jewish people through the long and seemingly endless exile. The Golus that we are in now, which is hopefully very soon going to come to an end, is called a journey through Midbar Ha'amim. It's the Midbar, it's the desert of the nations. We find in Yechezkel the term Midbar Ha'amim. It's a Midbar of the why? The alien nations that we are living amongst, the Gentile nations, that the Jewish people have been scattered in the diaspora throughout, all scattered all across the globe. And these nations are called the desert, many unfriendly, even hostile, a very difficult place. That is the reason why it's called a desert. Because a desert is a very difficult and it's not hospitable to life. Things about the desert, there's three defining elements to the desert. One aspect of the desert is a parched land. It's dry, there is no water. Since there is no water, nothing grows. Besides a cactus or two, the desert is empty, it's barren. That's number one. Second thing about the desert is good things don't thrive over there, but negative things are in the desert. You have life, but the life, most of the inhabitants of the desert, you don't really want to get too close to. Or at least you want to find out before you touch them what they are. So they're poisonous, they're venomous, these are dangerous creatures. That's what grows, those are the ones who call the desert their home. The other element about the desert is, as a result of these two things, there isn't any vegetation and things to support life. There is all these negative, and also the weather is extreme. By day, it can be extremely, excruciatingly hot, and by night it can be freezing cold, and the wind is very, very intense. So because of these situations, people don't live in the desert. So the desert is called an area, as the pasuk refers to it, Asher lo yeshev adam sham, where man doesn't live. These three elements are applicable to the nations, to the lands of the nations that we live amongst. When we're saying that it's a place that's a parched land, water is holiness, godliness, because water gives life. Hashem is the source of life. A place where there is an abundance of water means there's an abundance of godly flow, of divinity. Hashem is very open and manifest in that place. Where godliness is revealed, there is blessing. There is a lot of growth. What growth? What grows? Vegetation that is nutritious, that is healthy. The vegetation, that's Kedusha. So Hashem is the water. The vegetation that grows is the holiness that is produced as a result of the godly flow of Hashem, of the waters that flow in that place. Okay? That is, so we understand that the lands, the land of Israel is a land of water. Why? Because about the land of Israel, it says, "Tamid ene Hashem alekecha b'mereishis hashana d'achrishon." The land of Israel is a land of divine manifestation. God is very accessible, especially in the days of the Beis Hamikdash. Hashem's light was visible, was apparent. People can see. First of all, people experienced miracles constantly. There were prophets, and the prophets were continuously doing miracles in people's lives. And even if there wasn't miracle, but people can see Hashgacha Pratis. It was so clear in every turn that the occurrences and the happenings of your life, even today in Israel, people are far more can feel and sense the presence of the Shekhinah. Let alone before the time of the exile, when we lived in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, Hashem was so tangible in the land, that's why it's full of water. As a result of the land being full of water, it was full of holiness. Holy growth, mitzvahs, Torah, there were Torah giants, there was so much Kedusha everywhere for us to feast, for us to nurture our hungry souls. Living in the land of Israel was in an oasis of holiness, completely filled with all the vegetation, all the orchards and other whether fields of grains and so forth. Everything was there in abundance. Living in the land outside of Israel, in the land of the nations, is a land where there's divine concealment. The water isn't flowing. There is also, as a result of that, Kedusha isn't growing. So there is a lack of holiness available for us when we are scattered amongst the realms of the unholy. On the other hand, what is available in abundance are snakes and scorpions. There are all kinds of negative forces, unholy things, that harm the Jewish people when they were in exile, both physically and spiritually. Physically, we were scattered amongst many, many nations that were out to hurt us, to harm us, many anti-Semites and the like. And this is continuously throughout Jewish history. But also spiritually, we contacted all kinds of poisonous elements that have threatened, and sometimes even more than threatened, impacted the Jewish people. Where all kinds of infections and diseases, many people sadly, Jews got polluted by the pollution of the unholiness that is in the lands of the nations. And Chas v'Shalom went astray. And even those that didn't go astray and are still committed to Torah and mitzvahs, even they, their purity has been diminished to a very, very great degree. So that's the reason, and as a result of this, we said before, what else is in the desert? The man doesn't live in the desert. It's not fit for human residence, for human being to live in. So the who is the human being? God is called the human being. He's called the supernal man, Adam Elyon. The land of Israel is a place which is fit for Hashra'as HaShechinah, for Hashem to dwell. Even in the time of exile, God still remains in the land of Israel. It says the Shechinah has never left the Kosel HaMaravi. So God is there. However, in the lands of the nation is not a place where God feels comfortable in. He cannot live here. He does come along with us in the exile. Wherever the Jewish people go, God goes along with them. Galu, but it's called Galus HaShechinah. Hashem doesn't feel comfortable. He doesn't have a place where he can feel that this is my place. So that's what it means, that this is a place where there is no, man doesn't live. So there is, okay. So this is the journey of the Jewish people going through the desert is symbolizing the Gullus. Because in the long Gullus, we are traversing, moving through nation after nation and going from place to place. What's the point of this journey? Why did God bring the exile upon the Jewish people? Why did Hashem scatter us into a barren wilderness? So the Medrash and Rashi says, it was a mashal lemelech. There was an example to a king, Shoyah ben Noichayla, that his son was sick. It's because the Jewish people were ill. In order to heal them, God took us into exile. But that seems very strange. In order to heal the Jewish people, we went into exile. What kind of healing can come from exile? What kind of benefit comes from this? So in the simple story, in the literal story, when we're talking about the journey as it happened in its literal sense, the Jewish people went from Egypt, and they traveled from Egypt, they went to the land of Israel. However, if we're going to imply that this journey through the desert is symbolizing the future journey, the painful, long, and bitter gullus that we will be amongst in the wilderness of the world, amongst the Gentile nations. So over there, we were exiled from Israel, from a holy land. Okay, we're going to go back to where? Go back to the land of Eretz Yisrael. But how is this how does this relate, or how can we connect this journey and say that the meaning of this journey is the journey of the Jewish people, is reminiscing or is symbolized in the journey when the Jewish people left Egypt. And during our present day exile, we're not leaving Egypt. We left the land of Israel to come back to the land of Israel. But we went into Golis in between. But we're going from Israel to Israel, from Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. And over here we left from Egypt. And the explanation is, yes, indeed. True, we were exiled from Israel. But the reason why God brought us, took us from Eretz Yisrael and scattered us into the Golis, is because even though we lived in the land of Israel, in truth, we were really still in Egypt. We were really in Mitzrayim. Because what does Mitzrayim mean? Besides the literal sense of Mitzrayim being a country, Mitzrayim also has a spiritual meaning of what it means. Mitzrayim means Meitzar. Meitzar means boundaries, limitations, constrictions. The reason why God sends us into Golus is because we are enjoying a relationship with Him before we left, but our relationship is constricted. Our relationship is limited. Our relationship it's beautiful. It's nice. It was a wonderful, wonderful relationship we had in the land of Israel, but it wasn't good enough. It was still Mitzrayim. It was still constricted. There were still boundaries in the relationship. Hashem wants us to break free from all limitations and all boundaries. So for that reason, God is taking us out of Mitzrayim and sending us into the Golis. It's dafka through the trials and tribulations, the challenges, the difficulties that come about through living in this harsh environment of the desert, of the Golis, in which we come to a far greater relationship with God, one that is called Eretz Yisrael. How does the Torah refer to the land of Israel? Eretz Toiva Rechava. A land, a good land and a broad land. The total opposite of Egypt. If Egypt represents limitation and boundaries, Eretz Yisrael represents a land, as Hashem said to Yaakov Avinu, Nachla B'li Mitzarim, a Nachla that has no boundaries and has no limitations. So the going into exile is really a coming from a state of holiness, but a state of holiness that is limited, and Hashem wants to bring us to a limitless connection to Him, to an infinite bond with God. To understand this a little better, we will use the analogy or the example. See, when we say that the Jewish people go into exile, we're going into the wilderness, it's not only the Jewish people as a whole, collectively we're going into exile. It's each and every one of us as an individual. Our souls go into exile. The descent of the neshama into the body is called a descent into exile. Because when the neshama is in heaven, it's inhabiting worlds of light. It's in the direct path of the divine radiance. Hashem's light is shining on the soul in a very bright way. The neshama, of course, is enjoying the glow of godly light, and the neshama is bathing in that light. It's warm, and in that sense, the neshama is connected to Hashem with a very strong connection. She's serving God. She's singing to God. She loves Hashem. She fears God. She's in a state of complete attachment to Hashem. However, Hashem says, that's wonderful and that's good, but there is a limitation to that relationship. And what's the limitation? Because you're loving me out of your nature. Of course, when you put somebody, any entity, in the direct light of God's light, the natural response, the natural reaction to that is going to be that this creation is going to become mad with love to God, because God is delightful, endlessly delightful. So the neshama, being in such close proximity to Hashem, is loving Hashem, but it's natural to the neshama. And when something is because of your nature, that self, the very aspect of it being natural, is a limitation. So in order for the neshama to enjoy an endless bond with God, so Hashem has to take the neshama out of the world of light and plant the soul in the world of darkness. Hashem causes the neshama to plunge into the lowest state of existence, which is the existence of the physical world, which is a state of darkness. What is neshadish? What is the chiddish? What is new? What happens now to the neshama? One thing, we are given a choice. Now we can choose to be in a relationship with God. Hashem gives us a choice. We can choose bachar to bachayim, we can choose life, or God forbid, we can choose the opposite. We can choose holiness, we can choose the opposite of the holy. We can choose goodness, we can choose evil. This is now, when the neshama is choosing, that's outside of its nature. Why? Because the very aspect of choice, choosing, has the power to choose means that you're free to choose. It says that when God gave Adam and Rishon free choice, it says, Hei na'adam ha'ya ka'achad mimenu. God, Adam Arishan is like the singular one, is referring to Hashem. Hashem is the only one who really has free choice. Why? Because he's omnipotent. Who can tell God what to do? He is free to choose. Every other creature, every other being, works and operates within a certain pattern, within a certain predictable manner, in which we know that if you are created so-and-so, and this is your chemistry buildup, you will react in these circumstances to so-and-so. That's true about all of creation, even angels above. They are in a world full of light, so they will react to light, and so forth. Everything is following a certain systematic way. God is the only one who is free. He can do what he wants, and he shares that freedom with the neshama when it's down here below. So it's dafka over here when the neshama can make choices. That choice is connected to God's infinite power, where the neshama gets the infinite power to choose right from wrong, good from bad. That's number one. Secondly, it's also considered going out of the nature of the soul, because if anybody was going to bet on the neshama, if we're going to predict what's going to happen to a soul when it comes down into this world, and it's surrounded with so much gashmias, such materialism, and so forth, and there's hardly anything there to stimulate the neshama towards heaven, towards godliness, what is probably going to happen to the neshama? What is the natural thing for the soul to do? The natural thing for a person to do is to become distracted by earth, by earthiness, and get very involved in gashmias and materialistic pursuits, and forget its relationship to heaven. When the soul, however, despite all that, despite the cards being stacked against it, despite all the predictions that are leaning or predicting that the soul will lose its connection to Hashem, if the neshama can go beyond that and nevertheless maintain a relationship with God and build a relationship with Hashem and increase its through Torah and mitzvahs, so that is breaking out of nature. Now the neshama is freeing itself from constrictions and limitations. That's the idea of going from Mitzrayim and coming to Eretz Yisrael. What does Rashi say is the neshama, the condition of the soul? The neshama, the Rashi says, in a state of choleh. The neshama is sick. What's the illness? It's living in Egypt, in the sense that we're saying before that Egypt means this is really, really a strange thing. We're saying that Egypt means the neshama in heaven, living in the highest worlds of light. But that, even though it's light, it's called Egypt because it's narrow, it's limited, but it's called sick. What is the illness? So in Sfarim it says that the word chayle is gematria 49. Every letter has a gematria. So the word chole is gematria 49. The neshama in heaven experiences the 49 gates of holiness. Memtas shari bina, 49 gates of wisdom. But the one thing that eludes the soul is the 50th gate of wisdom. And that's knowledge of God itself, of God himself, is the ultimate detachment. And the 50th is infinitely higher than the 49. The 49 are beautiful. They're spiritual illuminations. But to know God itself, for the neshama to achieve that ultimate union with Hashem, the neshama doesn't have that, and that's called illness. Because the neshama knows it when it's in heaven. The neshama wants the 50th, but the 50th, she can never reach the 50th gate. That's why she's called sick, because she's sick with love. Chayla sahava, she's dying, or crying, so to speak, for a greater light, but she can't have it. And God says to the neshama, the only way you're going to have that light, the only way you're going to come to this break out of your, yet to Eretz Yisrael, where there is no disease, Eretz Yisrael, where you will reach the attain the level of rechava, of broadness, of the 50th, you have to go on a journey. You have to go through, and the journey means going into a wasteland. The journey means going into a midbar, a place of snakes and scorpions, a place where there is no water. See, at least Egypt is a civilized land. It's a land where people can live. It's not the best of lands, but it was a land. A land of, again, of course, the physical Egypt was a rotten place. But when we're using Egypt as the mystical meaning of Egypt, is Egypt meaning referring to the neshamas when it was in Gan Eden, or referring to the Jewish people when they lived in the land of Israel in the time prior to the Golas?
in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, or even in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. So they were living in Egypt. Egypt is a place where there is light, there is water, there is life can go on. God says to the neshama, I have to take you out of this place in order for you to be healed. So Rashi says, we are going on a distant journey. The king says to the prince, come with me, you need to be healed. We are going to go on a distant journey. On a distant journey means to travel down to earth, to come down to a place of difficulties, places where there is going to be concealments and hardships, places where you're not going to feel me, you're not going to see me. Pain and suffering. And the point of that is, we're journeying to be healed. We're journeying to the land of Israel. That's the journey. Now, as we go on this journey, and as we said earlier, again, this is both individually and collectively. Individually, each neshama makes its journey into this world. Collectively, the same thing. The Jewish people lived in the land of Israel. They were enjoying the closeness to Hashem. But God said, of course you're all learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, because you're surrounded by such gilui shchina, by such revelation of Hashem. Let me increase your connection to me by putting you in a place that is not conducive to Kedusha, to a place that you'll be challenged. That's how you're going to break out of your Egypt and you're going to come to Eretz Yisrael, the ultimate Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem brings upon the Golus, scatters us amongst the nations. Now, here's the thing. When we go in this journey, we know that the purpose of it is Yerida Tzairach Aliyah. The sake, as we said earlier, it's the sake of an ascent. We're going down. We're going to go into darkness. But the point of coming into darkness is for the sake of the great, great light that's going to come afterwards. So we know, we're told constantly, all the difficulties and hardships that happen in our life, gamzu letova, this too is for the good. We might not understand. One day we will know the good that comes out of it. We will know that the pain and the suffering, really, God had good intentions. There was something positive, something good that is supposed to come out of these difficult things. We know that. Same as also the spiritual difficulties that we go through when we have doubts and questions and confusions and we have to deal with all kind of yetzer hara, evil inclination, and the hardships that come about in living in the body and living in this world. We know that it will be good. It is for a good purpose. But here's a very important thing to remember. True, it will be good. True, it one day will be wonderful. But as we are experiencing it, and as we go through it, it's not fun. It's not fun at all. It's very, very painful. And we don't see the good in the bad. We have emunah, we know, but we don't see it. What we experience is pain. What we experience is difficulties. What we experience is a separation from Hashem. That is why Rashi says about the entire journey, and the Medrash says about the entire journey, Khan, this is a journey of anger. Kan kiyasuni. This is a journey of anger. We experience the galus as a time that God is angry at us. We feel abandonment. We feel neglect. We feel that He's upset at us. We feel that He has cast us into to the whims of the nations that we're or the forces of nature that we're in. We feel, and in our lives, when we experience this lack of clarity of seeing Hashem. And we go through these dark periods of our lives. It's a time of anger, and anger is Hashem too. It's like a parent that needs to discipline their child. They're doing it for a good purpose. They know something good is coming out of this discipline, but they're angry that they need to do that. Hashem also, when He brings darkness upon us, it hurts Him, it upsets Him, and it is an element of anger. It says the Gemara goes so far. The Gemara says that Hashem regrets. Three things Hashem regrets that He created. He regrets the exile, and He regrets the Yetzer Hara. He regrets that He made it. Meaning to say, what do you mean He regrets? He wants it. He knows something very, very good is coming out of it. But at the time that we and Him are going through this, it is very, very painful to God. And it hurts us very much. That's why every part of the journey, the entire 42 encampments, is pain. King Kiyasuni, there is anger, however. That's when we're journeying that way. At the conclusion of the journey, when we turn around and we start returning, we go back. What does it mean to go back? Going back means at the end of days, when the Jewish people will end the exile, and we will look back at the experiences, the pain, the suffering, the hurt, the atrocities that were done to us, whether on the physical, spiritual, all the all the hardship, and we can't, it's impossible for anybody to ever to capture in a book all the horror that the Jewish people went through. Now, when we will look back at it, when Mashiach comes, we will see that every little part that we went through was for our gain. It was really good. It was such a goodness. We don't understand why now. In the end, we will see that. Same as also in the end of a life, when a neshama goes back to heaven, and it can look at things from God's perspective. When God takes the soul and sits the soul down on God's lap, and God takes out the photo album, and he looks, and he goes through page after page, and he looks through life back again with us, he reviews life. Over there is when we redefine, we look at everything, and suddenly we see the good that's in it. We see that it was for our benefit, it was for good, even though as we were experiencing it, it was very painful. That's what it means on the return journey. On the return journey means when we can see things from God's perspective. At the very end of days, in the days of Mashiach, it says, we will say to Hashem, Oitcha Hashem, we will thank Hashem, ki anafta bani, that you are angry at us. All the moments that we experience as anger, then when we go back, we will see the light, we will see the inner goodness that was hidden in them. We will redefine the whole story. But as we're experiencing it, it's an experience of kas. It's an experience of pain and of suffering. Now, what is the guarantee that that's the case? What is the guarantee that every single experience that we've gone through in our lives, all the pain, all the suffering, all the spiritual challenges that we've had, and the darkness that we go through, who is the guarantee that it's all good? Maybe it's not good. Maybe it says Gamzul Latova, everything is good. But how do we really know that? So Rashi gives a mashal. Rashi says, Mashal Lemelech, that the king is going with the child on the journey. Which means that when God sends the soul into this world, the soul doesn't go alone. When the Jewish people are going into exile, they're not going alone. If the king is with us in every single stop, in every single place that we go, it must be for good, because the king would not be taking us through a situation for bad. The king, after all, is the all-powerful being. If a person is a father taking his child, he's not in control over the circumstances. But the king is in control over the circumstances. He's the king. Nevertheless, he takes his child through all these stations is because the king... So that's the indication that must be for good. And as Rashi says, the king is really going to heal the child. It's all for the benefit of the child. But here is where we come to the most important question. And this is where we all object to this. I mean, we all have a question, because you can hear Gamzul Latoyev from Teritol tomorrow. And it boils down to one question. True, whatever God does is for the good. But what's with me? What happens if I'm the one who wrecked my life? What happens if it's my own fault? Because all this talk of constantly hearing that whatever Hashem does for you is for the good. Okay, I know what Hashem does for me. But I know what I do to myself. And I know there are moments when I've done things many moments, and time and time and again, when we do things which it's not a darkness that God brought upon us. True, Hashem brought us to temptation. Hashem brought us to states of confusion. But that's it. That's too far as He brought us. We on our own sometimes wander off into terrain where God has said, don't go there. Don't do that. We can do things to destroy our own life, to hurt ourselves. Then the question is, what's with that? Who is the guarantee? So who is the guarantee that I'm in a good place? Maybe I'm in a situation, I'm in a state where I can really fall into despair. Because true, Hashem has put me in the situation where I have an assignment and a test, but He never asked me to fall, and He never asked me to make the mistake. So here, and that's really the question. If you look at the 42 journeys that the Jewish people went, many of the suffering and the pain that came about was because of their mistakes. They sinned. They did things they ought not to have done. So this is a good question that everybody should ask, and we ask it many times. What's the answer to this? The answer is, it's very hard to understand this, but that's the truth, and it's the absolute truth. We never ever go out of the divine, of God's jurisdiction. We never go into a place where Hashem is not in control. Notwithstanding Bechira Chafshis, of course we have free choice, and Hashem gives us choices to make good and bad. There is a plan for our life. Even when we, on our own choice, choose the wrong thing, it's not what Hashem wants, but it is al pi hakavana. It's according to the Kavanah. Where do we find this? I mean, this is really a talk which requires many hours to discuss on its own. I'm just going to give a little tiny little point about it. It says in the Medrash, in Parshas Vayeshev, we're talking about the first sin, Adam HaRishon, it says, Noira Alila al-Bnei Adam, Hashem brings alila. Hashem brings alila means a libel against man. God was the one who caused him to sin, and then he blamed him on it. That's what the Medrash says. Noir alila b'nei Adam. Hashem is the one who made it. So the words that are used in Sfarim, it says something like this. It says that Hashem sometimes brings, incites the Yetzer Hara on a person. Incites the Yetzer Hara. And the person succumbs to sin. Now, let's understand this very carefully. Hashem never meddles with our freedom, free choice. Never. We have free choice. Nevertheless, there are certain times that he brings us to a point where the sin was almost unavoidable. But here's an interesting thing. The fact that why? Let's first see why. Because ultimately, maybe now, maybe in 10 years, maybe in 15 years, maybe in the next lifetime, we don't know when. Eventually, every fall, every descent, even when a person falls into the lowest of the low, eventually, this is going to lead him to the highest of the high. Because ultimately, every soul must come back to God. And ultimately, when a soul comes back to God, it comes back in the highest way possible. So even the mistakes and things we ought, choices that we make that are not good. So here's the thing. Just like we understand that, because we think it's a contradiction. He's not making us do it, but he is. But which one is it? And the explanation is something like this. Just like we all know that Hashem knows what we're going to choose. And his knowledge that he knows does not impact our choice. We know that. That's what the Rambam, that's what the Torah tells us. We believe that he knows everything we're going to choose, but at the same time, it doesn't influence our choice. How that's possible? It's a good philosophical question. We're not talking about that tonight. But we know that that's the way it is. The Rambam says clearly, in the Torah, it's what we believe. We're responsible for our actions, even though God knew. His knowledge is not meddling, or is not interfering with our choice. The same is also, and here, listen, because Chas V'Shalom, if you get this wrong, this is going to be very dangerous. The same is also, when God's desire, so to speak, for a person to be in a dark place as a result of their sin did not influence the person to sin. The person's choice, because it's so removed, it's so much in God's heart or in his mind, so to speak, it's not within our space. In our space, we have a choice. It's not, and that's why we're held responsible. And there is reward and punishment. But we have to always recognize, and this is very important, because if not for this, we can really fall into terrible despair. The question is, where are we if we made bad choices? We look back at 10, 15 years of our life and we see, look, I've wrecked my life. Look what I've done to myself. So there's two ways of looking at it. One of it is, God didn't want me to do this. I did this and now finished. I don't know if I can still do tshuva, if I can ever do tshuva. It's over. The definition of where you are is a definition of destruction. A higher and truer way of looking at it is, no. Every journey, every place, every element of my life has Hashem's kavana into it. And even the worst of the worst is God. God is there too. But the difference is certain things Hashem is there in a more revealed way. Certain things Hashem is there in a more concealed way. That is the difference. Now I'm going to try to wrap this all up. That is the difference between the first three journeys and the rest of the Membeis Masais, the rest of the 42. The first three journeys of that the Torah speaks about, when the Jews went from Sukkos to Ramses, from Ramses to Sukkos, from Sukkos to Esam, from Esam to Pi Hahiroth, that is the journey that God takes us. That's the journey that the darkness that is imposed on every neshama. It's where the very fact that we come into a body, or the fact that Hashem has assimilated or scattered us amongst the nations, it's challenges that we get because Hashem wants to heal us. But again, these are challenges and darkness that Hashem puts upon us. The rest of the 39 journeys are journeys of darkness where the person himself steps out of line where Hashem has said you have to go, and where we, Chas V'Shalom, fall into things that we shouldn't have gone there, which we know clearly the Torah says not to go there. But nevertheless, again, as we see, there were sins, 39 different, not everything, every single thing was a sin. But it's when man sort of chooses his own way, sort of going into a darkness beyond the parameters that Hashem has defined or set for our neshama. We see this in where the journey was, quickly. The first three places where the Yidden traveled, they weren't in the wilderness yet. They were outside of Egypt. They went out of the city. They went from place to place. They were in the suburbs. They were in the suburbs of the land. That's the darkness where Hashem takes you, neshama. He takes you into the suburbs. He takes the neshama out of city life, out of the life of holiness, brings the neshama to a place where there's possibility for sin, not sin yet, possibility for sin, possibility for getting distracted. That's the first three journeys. It's Piktzei HaMidbar. We get close to the Midbar, but not into the Midbar yet. Going into the Midbar is already later. That's happening later. So that's why the first three, the difference between the first three and why the Medrash speaks only of three. What's the difference between the general idea? In both of them, God is coming along with us. Because there is never an element in our life that is not meant to be. Hashem is with us through the darkness, in both levels of darkness. Darkness which life presents us with, and the mess that we ourselves create, that too Hashem is with us. The difference is, in the first case, it's obvious that the king is with us. Melech is going with his son. In the second case, it's more hidden that the king is with us. There isn't an explicit statement in Rashi even that the king is there, but the king really is there. Now let's understand, what are the three things, just to do it very quick, what are the three things that happen? What happens on this journey? We fall asleep, we slept, we got cold, and we got a headache. What are the three? You got a headache, that's right. Hashem says, you got a headache. What are the three things? So the idea is quickly as follows. In order for the neshama to come into this world, to be challenged, and to, as we said earlier, in order to give the neshama the ability to break out of Egypt and come to a state of true freedom and true infinite unity and oneness with God, Hashem has to bring the neshama into the darkness. Because to give a person a choice to choose light, good from bad, there has to be a balance. There has to be good and bad. When the neshama is in Gan Eden, as we said earlier, it's living in light. In living in light, there is no possibility for the neshama to choose bad. So the neshama has to come down to a place where there is a choice, where there is darkness, so there is a possibility to choose something other than God. That's number one. Okay, that's the idea of here is where we slept. Sleeping, what happens when a person sleeps? Their vision is closed. They don't see anymore. There is concealment. They don't see. And their minds are also confused. There is a confusion. It says that sleep is the 60th of death. It represents God numbing the neshama, or toning down the soul, or clouding the neshama's mind. We don't have vision. That's Yeshananu. That's the neshama descending into this world. There is sleep. The next element of it is, however, in order for the neshama to be able to make the right choices, there also has to be, here is where we get cold. What does that mean? That's the opposite effect. You see, if God only puts the neshama into a state where he completely hides his truth, where there is only darkness, and the neshama has to struggle to choose God, then chas v'shalom, if life on earth would be such, if Hashem would place barriers and walls that separate him completely from us, we would never be able to choose him. Again, we would be able to choose darkness, but we would never be able to choose light. Because if we would be living in a total eclipse, if we would be living in total concealment, then so it's similar to what it says in creation. Initially, Hashem wanted to create the world b'midas hadin, with the attribute of judgment. He saw the world cannot stand the intensity of judgment. Shittif b'midas harachamim. Hashem put a little bit, he joined the attribute of compassion. What does it mean? The element of judgment means, if Hashem would have had it his way, the world would have been a place of such darkness, complete darkness. But that would be impossible for us to find him. So what does Hashem have to do? He allows a little bit of light to come in. That means midas harachamim, it says. It says the dark, meaning, in the midst of the darkness that we live in, there are miracles that occur to us. Sometimes a tzaddik does a nes. We have little points of light. Sometimes we see, there are moments of illumination. So in the darkness, Hashem removes a little bit of that darkness. That's the idea of here is where we cooled off. Midas hadin is fire. Hashem does two things for the neshama. On the one hand, he puts us to sleep. On the other hand, he lightens the heat of that darkness. That the darkness should not be so dark, it should be cool. The midas hadin should not be such dark. He's lightening the midas hadin, softening it, giving it a little bit, like they were going into the desert heat, he put a cloud over their head. That the heat should not hit them with such intensity. That's the second thing that is required. The third thing that is required for a neshama to be able to have a fulfill its mission down here below, in order for us to be able to choose right from wrong, generally, how do we see the choice of right and wrong, good and bad? How do we see it? And generally, it's a choice between our minds and our hearts. In our minds, we know the emes, we know what's right, we know what's good. In our hearts, our emotions, our impulses pull us in the wrong direction. So generally, how would we look at life? What is the choice man has? Well, you're going to follow your intellect, or you're going to follow your reasoning, or are you going to follow your emotional desires and wants? However, if that's it, that would be the challenge in human life, to present us the choice of good and bad, human being would always win. Meaning the goodness would always win. We would always make the right choice. Why would we always make the right choice? Because a human being is essentially an intellectual person. So if it would be a fight between reason and impulse, reason would always win. We find that what? That every time we sin, every time we do what's wrong, there is always some rationale. Our animal soul, our negative side, our Yetzer Hara, also has seichel. It has an intelligence. And it always, even though we know he's telling us Baba Maisis, he's drinking a cup, but still it has some kind of logic, some kind of rationalization. If we wouldn't have any bit of rationalization for doing what we do, we generally wouldn't do it, unless a person becomes totally addicted to things. But before that, a person would not make a wrong choice. So to keep the balance, Hashem creates holy intelligence, and on the other side, there is also unholy intelligence. That's the idea of Kan Chashashnu Esreishcha. In order for Hashem to take us through the journey of Golus, which is ultimately for the benefit of the soul, we need three things. He needs to dull our spiritual senses. He needs to allow a little bit of light to come in, which is cooling the heat of the sun. And the other one is, Hashem has to give us a ability of having a seichel, of an intellect, like when the Jews argued with God and he said, aren't there any graves in Egypt? An element of mind, which is reasoning and logic, to support the unholy. These are the three elements that are necessary in order for us to make our way in life. However, as we said earlier, the journey that Hashem has taken us is the first three parts of the journey, which means general concealment of darkness is coming from above. However, the Medrash doesn't speak about all the other 42 encampments, because again, the other 242 encampments are matters of our own choice, not coming from God. However, Rashi does hint to it, and Rashi says, you did so, v'chulu, and the rest. What Rashi is indicating is, Rashi's telling us, I want you to know, that the other journeys that you do, and the mistakes that you make in your life, even when you fall, and you go into very dark places, there too, this too is the king going with you. Because in every aspect of your life, Hashem goes along for it. And ultimately, the point of it all is, because we will transform the greatest darkness into light, every neshama will come back to God, and the neshama will come back no matter how far and how disconnected the neshama came as a result of the exile, and even of the result of its own mess that it made for itself, it's not a mess that it made for itself. Because the king going along with the sun is not only on the first three legs of the journey, it's even when we go into the desert, even when we go mamish into that which we shouldn't be going into. Even that has a purpose and has a reason. And it's all about our connection to Hashem. But in order for the galus to take place, again, these three elements Rashi's emphasizing, because that's all to enable us to travel from Egypt and travel and come to the land of Israel. And let us see the land of Israel, Bekarav Mamish, very, very soon. We should be there and be completely healed from the illness of exile.